This audio is brought to you by Muslim Central. Please consider donating to help cover our running costs and future projects by visiting www.muslimcentral.com/donate.
عشرين فتم ميقات ربه أربعين ليلة وقال موسى لأخيه هارون اخلفني في قومي وأصلح ولا تتبع سبيل المفسدين ولما جاء موسى لميقاتنا وكلمه ربه قال رب أرني أنظر إليك قال لن تراني ولكن انظر إلى الجبل فإن استقر مكانه فسوف تراني فلما تجلى ربه للجبل جعله دكا وخر موسى صعقا فلما أفاق قال سبحانك تبت إليك وأنا أول المؤمنين قال يا موسى إني اصطفيتك على الناس برسالاتي وبكلامي فخذ ما آتيتك وكن من الشاكرين صدق الله العظيم.
الله تكبير. ما شاء الله إبراهيم جزاك الله خير. Amazing. You have a bright future, inshallah. So, inshallah, without further ado, before we begin, Ustad Noaman, I just want to make an announcement. Whoever's sitting on a chair in the rows, inshallah, the people behind you can't see the dars. So, if you can fold up the chairs and just, you know, we could sit on the floor, it'll be good. Unless you really need it, then it's fine. But if you don't need it, then sitting on the floor is better, inshallah ta'ala. Jazakum Allah khair.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Before I begin, I'd like to make a public service announcement. I've been giving durus in masjids and public settings many, many years, and I've learned some things that just only come with experience. So whenever I'm sitting in an audience, I kind of try to understand how the audience is situated. Every masjid has its own culture. And I've noticed something about the epic masjid, so I'm going to tell you an observation, okay? My observation is that corner right there, that's the lower ceiling, that corner, I call that the teenage section, okay? That's different from this section, because most of you walk in from here, so the elders are easier, they park themselves over here more. But the teenagers, they like to be further away, as far into the corner, away from the eye contact of any speaker as possible. And that allows them to do whatever. They're probably playing a game right now or having whatever chat right now in that corner facing a wall. And the thing that happens then is they start hanging out, talking, and there's a little bit of a noise that rises. And when that noise rises, it travels across the entire hall. So, and I'm scanning the room. Why are people talking to each other? And I notice no one is talking to each other. And then I realize, oh, there's a teenager section. And the teenager section always, there's always the invisible corner where they can't be made eye contact with. So here's the deal. I'm gonna give the dars. And by the way, this is something not just me, any public speaker will face, they will know, other than Khutbatul Jum'ah, there's gonna be some kind of a section that's always like the special spot. So if I hear the noise from the notorious section, I'm going to pause the dars, I'm gonna walk over, I'm gonna make a kind request to you young men to chill out a little bit, and then I'm going to come back and continue, and I'm going to make you famous. Okay, so that's just what I'm going to do. Okay, all right. People think I won't do it. I have done it. I've had people, you know, sometimes people bring their children, and I love having children in the masjid. But if your child has been gifted with a special set of lungs, you know what I'm talking about? And they're staring straight at you going, ah, ah, for 15 minutes. and you're listening to the lecture as if it is on mute for you. Like you don't hear everybody else. They're bleeding from their eyes and their ears, and you're just, I've done this multiple times. I'll just walk over and carry the baby for them. I just, let me help you out a little bit. Anyway, that was just a side public service announcement. So let's begin. A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajeem. We spoke last about the story of Samiri. We didn't really get to Samiri, actually. And we spoke about a story in the life of Musa alayhi salam that Allah has mentioned a couple of times. The central point of it is mentioned a couple of times. What's the central point? They've crossed the water. Musa alayhi salam has called Allah to speak with him to receive the Torah on the mountain. Okay, and the young man that beautifully recited, mashallah, I'm so proud of him, he recited from Surah Al-A'raf. And in Surah Al-A'raf, it's the same story that he was reciting from. Good job, by the way, mashallah. What he was reciting from, Allah tells the same story, but it's almost like it's from a different camera angle. You know, you're looking at the same thing, but if you're looking at it from this angle, you see something else. You look at it from this angle, you see something else. That's what Allah does with stories in the Quran. He will tell you the same story in one surah from one angle, then he'll tell you the same story in another surah from a different angle, right? And you will think that it's almost two different stories with one common point. Everything else seems to be so different. And that's because Allah is focusing on different things in different parts of the Quran. So the part that I'm going to recite to you or read from, that we started reading from, and I'm going to first give you kind of a recap. What did we do so far? I'll quickly translate what we did so far and then pick up from there. So you guys have context and it's a good review for you from a few days ago. So we begin. Ya Bani Israel, qad anjaynakum min aduwikum. The Israelites, after they cross the water, Allah addresses them. He says, we have rescued you from your enemy. Wa wa'adnakum janib al-tul al-ayman. And we have taken a promise from you on the side of the right side of the mountain. The same mountain when Allah spoke to Musa. I talked about that last time. We've done that already. Okay. Wa nazzalna alaykum al-manna was-salwa. And we have sent down manna and salwa to you, the food, the protein, the carbs. We talked about that last time, right? Kulu min tayyibati ma razaqnakum. Eat from the good and pure things that we've provided you. Wala tatghaw fihi, and don't rebel in it. Don't become rebellious within your rizq. Fihi, the he goes back to the rizq. So it was a strange phrase. Don't become rebellious within your rizq. We're going to see an explanation of that by the Quran itself a little later today. Fayahilla alaykum ghadabi. Because if you do so, then my anger will be unleashed on you. So if you violate my rizq, or if you violate my laws within my rizq, then my anger will be unleashed on you. And then he says, وَمَنْ يَحْلِلْ عَلَيْهِ غَضَبِي فَقَدْ هَوَى. And whoever my anger gets unleashed on, then that person has fallen. Fallen could mean they have fallen from honor to humiliation. Could mean they are as good as fallen into the tips of, you know, the depths of hell. Hawa can also mean an expression for they've been destroyed. The worst thing you can have is to fall from the rizq Allah has given you and given me, and we don't acknowledge it or appreciate it or stay within His bounds within it, and we've fallen. Okay, this is an ayah I skipped last time, but it's really important. Now Allah is telling them one more thing, a lesson that is incredible. He said, listen carefully. وَإِنِّي لَغَفَّارٌ. And I am someone truly that forgives over and over again. Ghaffar, fa'al in Arabic, is sighatul mubalagha littakrar. It's something that you do over and over again. Like a qassas is someone who, you know, a butcher who cuts the meat over and over again. And a khabbaz is a baker who makes the bread over and over again. That's why it's called a khabbaz. A khayyat is a tailor because he stitches over and over again. And the same way Allah's name is Wahhab, Qahhar, Ghaffar. Same pattern, fa'al. And that means Allah forgives repeatedly. What does it mean that someone forgives repeatedly? That means they're dealing with someone who makes mistakes what? Repeatedly. You don't have to forgive repeatedly if you're not dealing with someone who messes up repeatedly. That only makes sense in that context. So when Allah calls Himself Ghaffar, He lets the believers know, the Israelites, and by extension us, He lets them know, I know that you don't just make one mistake and from then on you become an angel. You make a mistake and tomorrow you make a new mistake and the day after you make a new mistake and then a year later you make the same old mistake sometimes too. You go back and make same mistake. You're human. You make mistakes. And when you make those mistakes, I'm telling you that I will forgive over and over again, but for a certain kind, not for everyone. I will not give this repeated benefit to everybody. Who is going to get that benefit? لِمَنْ تَابَ وَآمَنَ وَعَمِلَ صَالِحًا ثُمَّ اهْتَدَى. It's really interesting language. He says, for whoever repents, meaning they really feel bad about what they did, they turn back to Allah. وَآمَنَ, then they restore their connection with Allah. They restore their faith. وَعَمِلَ صَالِحًا, and they acted in a good way from then onwards. So, okay, they didn't just make a mistake and say, I'm pretty sure Allah's going to forgive again, so it's okay. It's okay. There's always next Ramadan. It's all right. That's not their attitude. But then what the remarkable thing about this ayah is Allah says, فَقَدِ اِهْتَدَى After that, they became committed to guidance. You would think the order is the opposite. First, somebody commits to guidance. Then they have faith. They strengthen their faith. Then they do good deeds. Like, the first thing is guidance. Okay, but Allah is mentioning the one who made a mistake, they make tawbah, they restore their faith, they do good deeds. All of this means they already have guidance, doesn't it? And he said, after all of that, then they commit to guidance. What? But the first part, tawbah, iman, amal salih, all of that is guidance. So what do you mean guidance after that? What Allah is telling us is that even if I prayed and I made tawbah and I gave sadaqah and I left the haram, I did good things, I left bad things, that actually can be very dangerous also, because once I do those things, I might assume that those good deeds equal me having guidance. That's just not the case. Those are good deeds. Those are good deeds, but that doesn't mean that my search for guidance is over. I already graduated from the school of guidance. Now I need to make sure other people graduate. No. I'm on my quest myself. So actually, as they become better, they become even more concerned with their own commitment to guidance. This is a really powerful thing, because very often in religious psychology, Muslims and other religions, when people become committed to a religion and they start believing that they have transformed, and they start believing that they are now, they're reformed, they're born again, like the Christians call themselves born again, right? Or we say we've made tawbah, or you know, alhamdulillah, Allah guided me, now I'm guided, now I've changed. Now that you feel like you've changed, you start feeling like I need to make sure everybody else changes. Because I'm past that. I used to have this problem many years ago. Man, I see myself in you. I used to be like you, but alhamdulillah, I'm here now. No. Okay, so you left that darkness, but there's another darkness that you need to confront. And then another one that I need to confront. And then another one that I need to confront. You understand? So the horizons of the darkness change. And I have to remain vigilant. And so he says, ثُمَّ اهْتَدَى. This is Allah's way of telling Muslims in the Quran in many places, that we should never develop self-righteousness, that we shouldn't consider ourselves beyond criticism. And one of the best litmus tests to consider myself beyond criticism is I'm quick to point out the flaws of others or diagnose the flaws of others, because I'm already good. It's I see this problem in you and that problem in you and that problem in you. You see, I figured you out. This is what Allah is, you know, the anecdote that Allah is giving us against that. So now, again, our review. وَمَا أَعْجَلَكَ عَنْ قَوْمِكَ يَا مُوسَى. What rushed you away from your nation, Musa? I talked to you about that last time, the discussion of leadership. هُمْ أُولَاءِ قَالَ هُمْ أُولَاءِ عَلَىٰ أَثَرِي. They were just behind me. They were just, literally just behind me. They are going to follow what I left with them. They are literally following my footsteps. وَعَجِلْتُ إِلَيْكَ رَبِّي لِتَرْضَى. And I rushed to you so you could be pleased. I thought this would make you happy. قَالَ. Now this is the part we didn't do before. قَالَ فَإِنَّا قَدْ فَتَنَّا قَوْمَكَ مِنْ بَعْدِكَ. Well, after you left, Allah tells him, what we have decided to do is we have put your nation to the test after you left. That's what Allah tells Musa on the mountain. We have decided to put your nation to the test after you left. وَأَضَلَّهُمُ السَّامِرِي. And Samiri, this guy named As-Samiri, he has misled them. Oh, he came to Allah to receive revelation and to correct the ways of the Israelites. And Allah says the Israelites are worse off now than they ever were before. In your absence, I decided to test them, and As-Samiri has misguided them. Now, the first impression that somebody might get when they read this is, that means that sounds like Allah misguided them. Sounds like Allah is punishing Musa alayhi salam for showing up early and he misguided the entire nation. But this is what happens when we don't study Quran holistically. Surah Taha is a long surah, and earlier in the surah, Allah Azza wa Jal told Musa himself, the first time he was on the mountain, he told Musa alayhi salam then, وَفَتَنَّاكَ فُتُونَ. We tested you in lots of different ways. He tells Musa, we tested you in lots of different ways. How was Musa alayhi salam tested? Well, we think he was tested when he had to run away from Egypt. We thought he was tested when he was seeing the, you know, the disaster of the Israelites. But actually, he was also tested with the opportunity to do the wrong thing. He was raised in the royal palace, like royalty, in Egypt, where all of the things that every Muslim knows are haram, are completely halal. And so he's a millionaire, he's a baller, he's extremely strong, he has royal status, he's above the law because he's from the royal family. And yet, and that is actually a pretty big trial by itself. That freedom and that mobility is a trial by itself. Allah tested him with difficulty, but also Allah also tested him with the good life. The good life can also be a pretty hard test. By the way, the good life being a test, or rizq being a test, is already part of the theme of this passage. Because Allah already said that if, you know, don't rebel within my rizq, right? لا تطغوا فيه. He already told us that. So now he says, now Allah is telling us, Allah has tested individuals. Allah will test me with hard times, and Allah will also test me with good times. And the same thing Allah does with entire nations. Same way Allah tests me in my life, the same way Allah tests entire nations. So He'll test an entire nation with economic disaster. And He will test another nation with a great economic recovery and many good years. What are they going to do with that prosperity? What are they going to do with that economic revolution? What are they going to do with all that new development or their newly found resources? What are they going to do with it? You know? And so he tests in both ways. And he says, when you left, I tested them essentially with freedom. I tested them with, you know, like a teacher that has a strict teacher that's in front of the classroom. All the kids are kind of behaved, unless they're in the teenage section, but they're kind of behaved. And then the teacher, the principal says, can I see you in my office for a second? And the teacher leaves the classroom. And what happens in the classroom after the teacher leaves? It's like a prison riot in the classroom. You can come back and barely find any desk in the same place that it was, any chair in the same place that it was, some people hanging upside down from the ceiling fan, all kinds of stuff, right? You'll see that because actually those kids failed the test of personal responsibility. Every one of those kids could have sat in, and my teacher expects me to be here. I know where I'm supposed to be. I know why my parents sent me to school. I know what I'm supposed to be doing, you know, with my time here and my purpose here. And then the moment they see the teacher walk away, they're like, freedom! And then they, you know what that is? They fail the test of personal responsibility. They fail the test of not being able to handle what? Freedom. Musa alayhi salam keeps a watchful eye on these guys. But when he walks away, now they're being tested with freedom. Now the ayah that the young man recited actually gives us a hint. Musa alayhi salam was kind of worried about leaving. So before he left, he turns to Harun alayhi salam and he says, "Ukhlufni fi qawmi." Listen, behind me, you're responsible for the whole nation. This is my nation, but I'm leaving you in charge. So even by saying, "Not ukhlufni fi qawmika, ya fi qawmina," or saying, he said, "Qawmi, this is my people, I'm in charge, but I'm making you VP right now, acting president. You're in charge. You have executive authority right now, but remember, you're answerable to me when I come back." This chain of command. So he tells him that, but he says, "Wala tattabi' sabila al-mufsidin." You better not fall into the trap or the ways of people that want to cause trouble. Mufsid is different from fasid. Fasid means a corrupt person. Mufsid is the one who creates trouble, who makes corruption. So Musa knows that within his people there are troublemakers. And before he leaves Harun, he says, "Listen, Harun, I'm leaving." And he could have given him a bunch of instructions: do this, do this, do this, do this. All these, you know, task list while I'm gone. The one task list he gives them is, watch out for these troublemakers. Do not fall into their trap. Do not follow their path. Just be careful of them. So he knows there are troublemakers there. Now, one of those troublemakers is Samiri, this guy named Samiri. And Allah is talking to Musa alayhi salam. He's speaking with him and he has a beautiful conversation with him actually. And the beautiful part of the conversation is actually in Surah Al-A'raf. The happy version of this story, the happy side of this story, we heard in recitation. But the stressful side of the story, we're hearing in Surah Taha. And here Allah tells him, Samiri, by the way, he's misguided your entire nation. Ya Allah, I came here to guide my nation, and the news you're giving is, my nation is misguided. And it's my fault. I came here to get guided, I came early, and because of that, they're misguided. وَأَضَلَّهُمُ السَّامِرِي. Now, if Allah has already named the culprit, right? Because, you know, the Israelites, they don't like to say, I did it. You know, they killed somebody. فَدَّرَأْتُمْ فِيهَا. They were pointing the finger at each. No, it wasn't me. It was that guy. That guy was like, well, me? It's my cousin. And the cousin was like, no, that's not me. It's him. Everybody's pointing at everybody. Nobody was willing to admit who committed the murder. But Allah solved that mystery this time. Because Allah already told him, no, your whole nation is not misguided. The whole trouble was started by one guy and Allah named him. So now Musa knows exactly who's to be held responsible. So you would think when Musa alayhi salam is going to come back, who's he going to give it to? Who's going to get it? Samiri's going to get it. He's going to deal with the Samiri. Because Allah told him, أَضَلَّهُمُ السَّامِرِي. Now watch this. فَرَجَعَ مُوسَىٰ إِلَىٰ قَوْمِهِ Musa alayhi salam came back to his nation. غَضْبَانَ Extremely enraged. He's extremely enraged. It's one thing that your people mess up, and they mess up quite a bit in the story of Musa. They mess up a lot. It's another that your own Rabb is telling you how much they messed up. That's a double embarrassment. Your own Rabb told you your nation is misguided. They failed a test. It was so easy for them to fall into the wrong. A prophet stays with them for many years, and it's hard for them to hold on to guidance. This guy, Samiri, does his thing for a few hours, a few days, a couple of weeks. The whole nation's misguided. Wow. You know what that tells you? Guidance is a long-term project, and misguidance is a really quick trend. It happens super fast. Building takes a long time. Destruction takes a few seconds, isn't it? Building a building is a long project. Destroying a building is a couple of detonators and you're done, isn't it? So this, Allah is teaching us that that misguidance, deterioration in a nation, it doesn't take many years. It can take a few days. And an entire Muslim nation can fall into corruption and misguidance. Even if weeks ago they were under the care of a prophet himself. So Musa alayhi salam is enraged, he's furious. But Allah didn't just say he's furious. He said asifan. He was also extremely sad and disappointed. It's interesting. You angry, maybe even anger is twofold. He's angry at them, but he's angry at himself for not seeing what was coming. Angry at himself for not going sooner. He's really sad that these people, Allah has done so much for them. Why can't they just straighten out? Why can't they do that? And he's also sad at himself. Why did I make this mistake? I shouldn't have come early. He's disappointed with himself. He's also sad, I put one responsibility. I tell Harun to do one thing. I told him not to let the troublemakers get their way. And Samiri is the top troublemaker. And Allah himself tells me he got his way. Come on, Harun. Come on. So there's multiple dimensions of the rage and of the sadness when he comes back. But he actually first came and he spoke. We'll look from the Qarina, we will see. He doesn't speak to Samiri first. And he doesn't speak to Harun first. First, he speaks to everybody. He just gathers everybody. He says, Ya qawmi, alam ya'idkum rabbukum wa'dan hasana? Did your Rabb, did your master not promise you a beautiful promise? Hasn't Allah already made you a beautiful promise? Afattala alaykum al-ahd? Did many years pass by and you forgot? Was it so many decades? Was it an entire era that made you have amnesia about the promise of Allah? How did you just forget? By the way, a few ayat ago, Allah was telling them, I have taken a promise from you. Remember that? Just a few ayat ago. And now Musa himself is saying, Ali Sam, did you forget that Allah made you such a beautiful promise? Has it been that long that you forgot? أَطَالَ عَلَيْهِمْ أَفَطَالَ عَلَيْكُمُ الْأَمَدِ. And then he says, أَمْ أَرَدْتُمْ أَنْ يَحِلَّ عَلَيْكُمْ غَضَبٌ مِّنْ رَبِّكُمْ. Or did you actually want that Allah's anger should be unleashed on you? Allah's anger should be unleashed on you. Did you hear this before in these ayat? Allah's anger being unleashed? You did, didn't you? It's being repeated. Now Allah is telling us something. What they just did is the tafsir of don't violate my rizq. Don't violate my rizq, because if you violate my rizq, what's going to happen? My anger will be unleashed. And Musa is now coming back and saying, did you want Allah's anger to be unleashed on you? You know what? That means they violated within the rizq of Allah. They committed a violation within the rizq of Allah. So whatever they do, we're going to study properly, because that's what it means to unleash Allah's rage on you. May Allah protect us from His rage. فَأَخْلَفْتُمْ مَوْعِدِي. And you went back on the promise you made to me? You had promised me also. You had made a promise to Allah, but you also made a promise to me. How could you do this? He spoke to the entire nation. But then, it seems from the context, the Israelites were how many tribes? Do you guys know? How many tribes? 12 tribes. So 12 tribes have 12 leaders. And the tribes have several families. So some argue, Israelite accounts are, there were over 70 leaders of small and big families together. So now the leaders are coming to tell Musa alayhi salam what happened. You know, it's like the senators of the states coming to explain to the president kind of thing, right? So they're coming to now explain to Musa alayhi salam. To help you understand this next ayah, I want you to understand something about the story. They ran away from Egypt. They crossed the water. They took whatever they could. So of course, if you can't carry heavy things, so at least you'll carry the most valuable things. So if you have a piece of jewelry, some stones, some important metal, some locket, some ring, some chain, so you'll definitely carry the valuable things. And they were afraid that in the travel, in the journey, it might fall out of my pocket, I'll lose it, and I'll never find it again. So they went to their tribe leaders, everyone went to the leaders and said, hey, we're going to leave our valuable items with you, because this is the safest place to keep the jewelry. So the leaders of the tribes, they kept the jewelry and the expensive items of all the Israelites. Whatever they had, they were carrying it. And it was a tough job, because they're in the desert. They can be attacked by anywhere, from anybody. And where are the attackers going to go for? They're going to go for where the heavy bags are, right? So the leaders were actually kind of burdened with the responsibility of carrying all that gold and carrying all that jewelry of the entire nation. But they didn't want that responsibility, but they were responsible, so they had to do it. Now, here's what happens. قَالُوا مَا أَخْلَفْنَا مَوْعِدَكْ بِمِلْكِنَا. We did not violate the promise we made to you under our own authority. The leaders are telling him, look, I know we're in charge of our families and our tribes. We could exercise no authority. The people rebelled. The people came at us. And what did they say? حُمِّلْنَا أَوْزَارًا مِّن زِينَةِ الْقَوْمِ. We were made to carry all the burdens of all the beautiful things that people have, all their jewelry and stuff. We were in charge of that. But people came rushing to us and says, give us back our jewelry. We want our jewelry right now. Give it, give it, give it. I remember that, you know, like everybody rushing to the bank to withdraw their deposits. So everybody rushed to them to withdraw all their items. And we were like, what's happening? Why are all these people all of a sudden asking for all their stuff back? But we were happy because we're tired of carrying everybody's stuff. So they say, in the wording of the ayah, they say, فَقَذَفْنَاهَا. We just dropped it. We're like, good, take it. Less problem for me. At least I won't be the first guy to get killed when the robbers come. Because if I have all the money, I'll be the first guy to get killed. So please, no, take your stuff. I don't want it. We didn't know why they were asking. We didn't know. And then turns out, all these people took all their jewelry and they handed it all over to this guy named As-Samiri. And As-Samiri, basically, we'll see what he did next. But they say, and فَكَذَلِكَ أَلْقَى السَّامِرِي. And this is the scheme that Samiri came up with. That's what the leaders tell him. So the first investigation of Musa was, first thing, he spoke to the entire people. The second thing, who did he speak to? The leaders. The leaders tell him, this is what happened. This is what's going down. This is what occurred. But then they're still the leaders are talking, and they explain to him, فَأَخْرَجَ لَهُمْ عِجْلًا جَسَدًا لَهُ خُوَارٌ. So he took all that jewelry, melted it down, and he built a statue of a calf, a baby cow. Okay? And he built the statue in a way that's got holes through it. So when the wind passes, it makes a whistling, howling sound. Ooh! It's pretty good. I know, I practiced before I came here. Okay? And when they heard it, they're like, did the cow just say moo? It's a miracle. They've seen miracles from Musa alayhi salam, right? They've seen miracles from Musa alayhi salam, and now they see this cow going, ooh, and they're like, whoa, this is. But then he says, Faqalu, and this is where Samiri played his game. The people were convinced, they gave it to him, and they said, Hada ilahukum wa ilahu Musa fanasiya. They said, this is your God. And this is Musa's God. Musa just forgot. Musa, I don't know what happened to him. He went off in the mountains. But actually, our real God is this. And the question then comes, how did people become from... Because Islam makes you smart. The reality is, at least it's supposed to. How did they go from smart to so stupid so quickly? That's an important question. Because sometimes you have to look at people in your own family and say, what happened? How did you go from this to this? Sometimes you find people that are highly intellectual, really smart in their field. They're a doctor, they're a PhD, they're an engineer, they run their business, they're so smart. And when it comes to their deen, they believe in the stupidest thing that violates the most basic principles of Islam, and they're so superstitious, and they say the most vile, shirky things, and you're like, but you're so smart though. How did you, I don't see the connection. Sam, and we have to understand this piece. The word, the operative word here is ijl. Ijl. Ijl is a baby calf. But ijl is also from the etymology of ajal, which means to rush, which is the same word used in these ayat when Musa alayhi salam was questioned by Allah, and Allah azza wa jalla said, "Ma a'jalaka an qawmika ya Musa, a'jalak." So there's ijl there too, right? Am ajiltum adhab. So he says, you know, alam ya'idkum rabbukum hasana afatala alaykum al'amad. Did a long period pass over you? What does that mean? Why did you do ijl? Why did you do ajal with the ajal? It's a play on words. But why is that? Because this is the key. And I've talked about this before, but I really want you to understand it here. Our religion, Islam, is different from every other religion on the face of this earth in many ways. But one of those ways is our religion is not a way to place orders with Allah and place our demands with Allah and expect a delivery within a schedule like you place an order on Amazon. And you're expecting delivery. Our du'as are not, I made du'a on the 27th of Ramadan, it's been like 3 days, and they're still not saying yes to my marriage proposal. I don't understand. Like, right? I mean, I did it like after every rak'ah I did it, every sajda I did it, and still, I don't understand. How come Allah is not answering my du'a? You know what that is? I did my part, now it's time for Allah to do His part, and He better do it on a schedule. He better do it on a schedule. And you know what? Other religions, they see their relationship with their God or their gods as a way of making their wishes. That's why people are willing to walk up 10,000 steps on a mountain to see a statue all the way on top and say, please let my cow give the best milk in the village. I just really need to be the number one. I need to be the dairy king of my village. And then he'll come back down because now he's guaranteed, right? They're hoping that things work out in this life. That's their relationship with their religion. Musa alayhi salam, our religion, we turn to Allah. Not, our number one relationship with Allah is not to get what we want in this life. Allah keeps telling us in the Quran over and over again, this life is temporary. It's filled with tests. I will test you with good. I will test you with bad. He keeps telling us this to give us perspective. And the next life is the ultimate life. Why is he saying this over and over again? Because you shouldn't get obsessed with what? This life. Man kana yuridu al-ajila. Even Allah says, people who just want this life, they want immediate results, they want something solved immediately. But the people of the Israelites had seen religions in Egypt, and they had been influenced by other cultures where people go and want their wishes, and they go to their gods and they make their wishes, and Musa alayhi salam is gone, and he's gone for more than 30 days, and they're like, how are we going to get God to answer our prayers? How's it going to work? Well, you know, there is something we can do. We don't have to leave Islam, but not all the practices that we saw, not all of them were wrong. I mean, the Egyptians built huge temples. They built the world's greatest empire. You think they were stupid? How can they be? So their religion wasn't entirely dumb. Some things of it were good. Some things of it may have some resonance, some value. So Samiri takes this idea and says, you know, actually, this doesn't make you a mushrik. You're still Muslim. You're still part of this ummah. But this is also a way to get your prayers answered. It's okay. It's not really shirk. Don't worry about it. Why are they so keen to answer this call? Because it's a quick way to get your wishes answered. That's the appeal of it all. Something visual in front of them. In fact, I told you last time, they saw other people having idols. They said, could you make us one of those? Those look pretty good. Right? Now Musa alayhi salam comes back. And he says, and now Allah comments here. Actually, the leaders are still explaining what happened, but Allah comments in the middle. أَفَلَا يَرَوْنَا أَلَّا يَرْجِعُ إِلَيْهِمْ قَوْلًا وَلَا يَمْلِكُ لَهُمْ ضَرًّا وَلَا نَفْعًا. Don't they see that they cannot respond to them in any way? And they can't control any benefit or any harm or any benefit? How do they not see that? They saw the world's mightiest king unable to harm them. They saw the world's mightiest military drown in front of their eyes and couldn't benefit themselves. They saw that with their own, and now they can turn to false gods like that? Before we learn more about the Israelites, my purpose of sharing these ayat with you is I have to learn about myself and you have to learn about yourself. We have to give up placing false hope in elements from other religions that we have actually introduced into Islam, into Muslim society. There are many, many Muslim societies in the world and cultures where you and I have been raised, where practices have made their way into Islam very subtly, very slowly, that have actually nothing to do with Islam, and a lot of them have to do with getting your prayers and your wishes answered. You can go to places in the world where some married couple cannot have a child, or when they have a child, they keep having a daughter. Astaghfirullah, how can you have a daughter, right? So you need a son. So you'll go to somebody, some kind of Samiri, because this Samiri is a representation of the Samiri industry. It's an entire industry. You'll go to that Samiri and say, making dua, it's not working, what should I do? He says, hold on, let me contact the jinns. And then he'll say, hey, here's a Snickers mini. Wrap it up in, you know, aluminum foil and wrap it up around your arm and blow on it every morning and do this for 35 days and you will have twin boys. And you'll see women walking around with Snickers bars or whatever they do. And what are you doing? This? Don't touch that, don't touch that. Also tell them, here, wear this amulet. If you take it off, your children will die. And some lady's got like infections on her wrist and the doctor said, please, no, I love my son. And this is not happening in some pagan society for thousands and thousands of years ago. This is happening in the homes of people that say, La ilaha illallah, Muhammadur Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wasallam. Why? Because Allah told us about Samiri, because Samiri created a business out of people's wishes and desires. And he wants to mix religion with it and create this industry where people come to him and they want to create these fake miracles or special effects and all of that so that people will be drawn towards that. This is an entire thing. By the way, Samiri, interesting name, Samiri. A few generations later, after the kingdom of Solomon, Sulaiman alayhi salam, this is many generations after in Jewish tradition, Judea and Israel were two different kingdoms. And actually within one of their kingdoms, the king introduced the worship of calves. He used to build statues of golden calves and all around temples. And they were the Muslims of that time, by the way, mind you. They were the Muslims of that time. And he was ordering the building of statues. And that was actually in Samira, Okay, they're called the Sumerians in biblical literature. Study the Sumerians. They came generations later. Perhaps the word As-Samiri is actually telling us this one guy's misguidance that became a trend gave birth to an entire civilization down the road that was worshiping calves within the Israelites who were the Muslims of that time. You know what that teaches us? One person's misguidance in one lifetime, 10 generations later, could be an entire nation. We have to be careful how we practice our religion, because the way you practice your religion isn't just about you. It may be about a million people 500 years from now. Your actions can actually impact millions of people in the future that you don't know. Just like somebody became Muslim 1,000 years ago, and we don't know how many hundreds of thousands of children belong in that family tree because of that one person's shahada. And how many of them are ulama and scholars and hufadh and du'at, and God knows what khair they've brought to the ummah from one young man taking a shahada thousands of years ago, or 1,000 years ago. The same way when someone goes down the path of shirk or kufr or disobedience, falls into a Samiri trap, what's going to happen 5 generations later, 10 generations later? You understand? So this is actually a lesson Allah has embedded by just even inserting the name as Samiri. Now, وَلَقَدْ قَالَ لَهُمْ هَارُونَ, and he hasn't talked to Harun yet. Musa is only talking to who right now? The leaders. And the leader said, by the way, Harun talked to them. They're telling Harun, by the way, he tried to fix them. And he said, مِنْ قَبْلِ يَا قَوْمِ إِنَّمَا فُتِنْتُمْ بِهِ, you people are being tested by this. Don't fall into this trap. إِنَّ رَبَّكُمُ الرَّحْمَانِ فَاتَّبِعُونِي, your master is Ar-Rahman. Your God is Ar-Rahman. He could have said, Inna Rabbakumullah. But he didn't say Allah. He said Ar-Rahman. Why? Because they're looking for care and love and blessings right now. And Allah says, why are you looking in the wrong place? You worship Ar-Rahman. You don't need a replacement for His Rahmah anywhere else. Come on, what's wrong with you? And he tried to correct them. By the way, the leaders are also telling him in between the lines, we tried to stop them, we couldn't. Who were we? Even Harun couldn't stop them. I mean, why are you yelling at us? Harun couldn't even stop them. He was talking to them and they still did what they did. So he says, فَاتَّبِعُونِي وَأَطِيعُوا, please follow me, obey me, Harun alayhi salam said to them. And they said to him, they said to Harun, Musa was gone. They said to Harun alayhi salam, قَالُوا لَن نَبْرَحَ عَلَيْهِ عَاكِفِينَ, we are sitting here doing our worship, حَتَّى يَرْجِعَ إِلَيْنَا مُوسَى, until Musa comes back. Who are you? Well, you think you're Musa? Harun. So where's your staff? Huh? I don't see you parting water. You know what that is? This is a powerful lesson in the Quran that not all leaders have the same influence. Not all leaders are the same. Not everybody can be Musa. Harun cannot be Musa. Musa is not Harun. When Musa alayhi salam is there, even though they mess around, everybody's still overall in line. Musa goes for a few days. A prophet is in charge, isn't it? Harun is a prophet, isn't he? But does he have control over them anymore? No. No. Even within prophets, Allah gave some the power of influence more than others. The same way in our deen, in our history, some people will have more ability to lead than others. You could have in a family someone who's a great scholar, great leader, great influencer for khair, great authority, people listen to him, and his own children, nobody listens to them. His own brother, nobody listens to them. They can't keep up with that legacy. You see this in the world of business. Somebody created a business, launched the business, took it, went public, all of it. He's the CEO now. When the CEO dies, somebody else takes his place. Is the business the same anymore? No, it drops, right? It's not that level of influence and authority anymore. So we don't blame, this leadership, they just don't even know what they're doing. Somebody could be commenting, you know, Harun just doesn't have the stuff. Musa alayhi salam's got the stuff, you know? He knows how to fix it. Harun alayhi salam, he just can't do it. No, Allah gives this ability and this power to impact people and have authority over people. It doesn't come from a person. It actually comes from where? It comes from Allah. And sometimes one of the tests of a nation is, and one of the great fitnas of a nation is when they stop having any regard for their leader, because then they fall into chaos, right? Even if the leader is sincere, he's just not strong enough to stop anything from happening. They're not going to listen to him. This happened in the history of the Israelites. Yaqub alayhi salam was the head of the household. He's the father. He has 12 sons, right? And he doesn't have any control over his sons, even though he's the head of the household. You see that? On the flip side, you find people like Musa alayhi salam, who has control. He has control over some very rowdy people, and they give him a hard time. And if you study the biblical account, they even tried to kill him multiple times. Actually, that happened too. The Quran doesn't go that far. The Quran says, لِمَ تُؤْذُونَنِي. Why do you cause me pain? They caused him pain. That's what the Quran says. They mocked him, caused him pain. But still, he had a level of authority. And perhaps also because he was physically also very intimidating. Because we know what his punch can do. Right? So, they don't want to mess with him too much. You know, so anyway, so now they say even Harun, he couldn't stop them. مَا مَنَعَكَ إِذْ So now Musa alayhi salam comes to Harun. His third stop. First the whole nation, second the leaders, third who? Harun. But Allah didn't tell him about the nation, didn't tell him about the leaders, tell him about Harun. Who did Allah tell him about? Oh, Samiri is going to be the final stop. He's not starting there. Because the criminal is the criminal. Fine. But the criminal could never have succeeded if the community didn't fail to begin with. The community was first responsible. You would think the leader should be responsible. No, you were all responsible. And then who's above you? The immediate leadership was responsible. And then above you, the presidential leadership was responsible. Then we'll go after the criminals. First, we have to understand where was the problem of within our own ranks before we go and blame the criminal. So when, for example, there's a problem in the Muslim ummah, and there's an enemy from the outside or some criminal, some culprit, okay, they're the culprit, fine, but the culprit can't succeed and continue to get away with their crimes until the people become lax enough and there's enough subscribers to their wrongdoing that allow that to happen, you see? And that's the first line, that's the first thing that has to be addressed. If you say, oh, these people are spreading ignorance. These people are spreading ignorance in the ummah. We have to stop them. Hold on, that's stop number four. That's Samiri. That's stop number four. First, we have to educate the ummah so they don't become victims of ignorance. If you educate them well enough, then you don't have to worry about Samiri having a business. If all of the people had a good knowledge of Torah and a good sense of tarbiyah, then Samiri wouldn't have any customers. So you go to them first. And then those above them, and then those above them, and then finally he's going to come to Samiri. Anyway, so he turns to Harun, and he says, "Qala ya Harun, ma mana'aka idh ra'aytahum dallu? What stopped you? What prevented you from stopping them from when they went on the wrong path? Why didn't you just stop them? What kept you from taking action? I made you the leader. Why didn't you act like the leader?" And Musa alayhi salam, "Allah tattabi'ani? Afa'asayta amri? Did you also not follow me? You also disobeyed me? You?" And that's his own brother, right? So now look at the next ayah. قَالَ يَبْنَ لَا تَأْخُذْ بِلِحْيَتِي وَلَا بِرَأْسِي Son of my mother, please don't grab me from my beard and my head. Please don't do that. I need to do a demonstration. Any volunteers? Want to volunteer? Come on, come here. Give me a volunteer. Come over here. Stand right here, young man. What's your name? Noah? Noah. Okay, come on, Noah. We're going to pretend your name is Harun, okay? All right. Okay, so he's Harun. What did you do? You grab the face, you grab the head, you're done. Excellent job. Give me five. Round of applause for Noah, please. Thank you very much. Good job. What did you do? What did you do? How could you do this? He's grabbing his face. And his brother's like, bro, come on, remember mom? Yabna'um. The literal phrase is son of my mother. Son of my mother means, oh, because when Musa alayhi salam thinks about mom, what happens to him? He calms down. Hey, come on. We're from the same mom. Remember mom? He said, can you please not grab me with my head and my beard? Ow! So that's what he says to him. Now, the thing is, did Musa alayhi salam grab the ummah's beard and their head? Did he grab the leader's beard and their heads? No. How could he? And I would say the least responsible, because he did his part. He tried to stop them. But the one he's grabbing is his own brother. Why? Because in leadership, there are people, there are thousands of people under you, but there are some people that are in your inner circle. And the inner circle are the people that can that you can yell at, and they know why you're yelling, because you have a relationship of trust with them at a higher level. And you can hold them to account, and you can be tougher with them, and you don't have to be politically correct with them, and you can expect more hours from them and more volunteer time from them or more sacrifice from them, because they are part of what? The inner circle. The inner circle of Musa alayhi salam is very, there's multiple circles. There's the ummah, then there's the leadership circle, and then there's the innermost circle, and the innermost circle is only Musa and who? Harun. You messed up? This is, and by the way, his anger, his grabbing his brother's face, his beard and his head, is an expression of how close he is to Harun. Because if he's not that close, then they can have a debrief, you know, and they can have a performance review and very formal. I realize that you failed in your leadership. Would you please explain what transpired? Like that, you could do that like HR style. You could do it that way. But this is a more intimate setting because they are that close. They are partners in this mission. So he says, please don't grab me. And remember, mom, basically, إِنِّي خَشِيتُ أَن تَقُولَ فَرَّقْتَ بَيْنَ بَنِي إِسْرَائِيلَ وَلَمْ تَرْقُبْ قَوْلِي. I was just scared. I'm telling you, I was terrified that if I stand up to these people, there were multiple possibilities. I'm going to read in between the lines what Mufassirun have said. If I stood up to these people had become so crazy. They had become such a cult that if I tried to stop them, I'm telling you, they would have killed me. They would have killed me. And if they killed me, then the people that were supporting me would have started a civil war with them. And by the time you came back, there would be bloodshed everywhere. If I spoke as much as I could anymore, and these people were willing to become violent. Another powerful lesson. What is that? When Muslims deteriorate, because remember, guidance takes a long time to build, misguidance happens very quickly. When misguidance seeps into a community, they become like an angry mob. You cannot question what they do. It really enrages them. Their voices rise. What did you say? You? You're going to say that? Say it again. This is going to become their attitude. And they can even become ready to kill. The more towards misguidance you go, the less control you have over your emotions. If somebody criticizes Islam, insults the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam, insults the Quran, comes to me and insults, I can sit down with them and reason with them and show them the stupidity of their ways without my temperature rising. I could do that. You know why? Because the truth is on my side. But if somebody comes and insults Islam and I don't have any knowledge, I don't have a foundation, you know what's going to happen? I'm going to start insulting them. I'm going to start yelling at them because I don't have a more powerful weapon than my own emotions. People that build a cult, because a cult never has an intellectual foundation. So the only thing that can defend a cult is rageful emotions. And he basically said, Harun is basically telling him, look, if I had gone any further, this nation would have been split. There would have been a civil war because these people were out of control. There's no way. And I had to decide whether I allow you to come back because you have enough influence as a leader to be able to do something about this or make the problem even worse. I had to make a judgment call. And actually, when he explained himself, Musa alayhi salam understood. You know what that means? A leader should know whether or not they have influence or not. And if they have lesser influence, they have to make a different kind of decision. And if they have more influence, then they can make more aggressive decisions. That actually depends on the ability and the doors that Allah has opened for them. It actually depends on that. I'll take one more minute, inshallah, and I'll be done. I know we didn't finish the story, but still. فَمَا خَطْبُكَ يَا سَامِرِي. Finally. So, what's your story, Samiri? Finally, Allah has turned to who? Samiri. This is a complicated part of the tafsir. There are many opinions here. I'm going to share the opinion of Al-Isbahani and Imam Al-Razi and of Ibn Ashur, as opposed to the opinion of Imam Alusi and some of the others. So there are multiple ways of looking at this part of the story, just for transparency. I just want to tell you where my position is coming from. Also influenced by the writings of Amin Ahsan Islahi in Tadabbur al-Quran. They have one set of views. And basically, the summary of those views is, I took what he says, قَبَضْتُ قَبْضَةً مِنْ أَثَرِ الرَّسُولِ. I took a bit from the footsteps of the remnants of the messenger. Some people interpret this that he took something from the horseshoe of the, you know, the horse that Jibreel alayhi salam was riding, and he saw him and nobody else could see him. Basartu bi wa lam yabsuru bihi. I saw what they couldn't see. So he saw Jibreel alayhi salam, and he took a little bit of the dust from the feet of the horse of Jibreel alayhi salam, and he put it on the calf, and the calf came back to life. And all of, none of this is, when you investigate it, none of this actually meets the criteria of absolutely sahih. So I'm not more inclined towards that view. Ibn Ashur and others have expressed a different view. And you know what that is? I took a little piece of Islam, the remnant of the messenger being Musa alayhi salam. I took some things from the religion that's already here, and then I tossed that too. Meaning I manipulated whatever pieces of Islam people could connect with, and then I did my own thing. كَذَلِكَ سَوَّلَتْ لِي نَفْسِي. And that's what I felt like doing. That's what I felt like doing. And that's his confession. Another way to read this is, actually, yeah, I see things that other people can't see. I have a spiritual connection. You know, you're a prophet. You get the ghaib, right? I get some ghaib business too. And I saw something nobody else can see. And this is why I did it. Did he say any of this to them? No, he sold them a calf. He didn't tell them nothing about no Rasul or nothing. He's trying to sell this story to Musa alayhi salam. And now he's trying to sound Islamic by using Ar-Rasul in his rationale. Because he's trying to tell people, no, this is not shirk. This is also from something to do with Ar-Rasul. And Musa alayhi salam doesn't want to hear any more explanation. What do you mean Rasul? What do you mean Qabda? What do you mean this piece of dust? What? Explain yourself. No. Musa alayhi salam sees right through it. He doesn't want to hear it. He realizes this guy is poison. He can manipulate any situation to sell his version of religion. He will do whatever he can. So I need to put a stop to this. And if I kill him, because Musa alayhi salam is within his rights to kill him, if I kill him, he'll become a hero. Some people, he say, die for the righteous cause. And because he's already said, Fanasiya, Musa is the one who forgot who the true God is. So some people will say, I'm misguided, he's guided. No, he has to live basically in exile. So Musa alayhi salam comes with a new punishment for him. Our time is up, so maybe another time, inshallah. I'll tell you, we'll dive into the punishment one day that Musa alayhi salam gave to him and the conversation Allah had with him. And that's the final thing that Musa alayhi salam as a leader dealt with. The thing to contemplate for us is the hierarchy. First the people, then the immediate leadership above them, then the top leadership, and finally the culprit. Finally, that, and that's one of the most important pieces of guidance in these ayat. May Allah Azza wa Jalla allow us to draw wisdom and guidance from the remarkable stories and lessons and teachings in the Quran. And may Allah allow us to bring them into our lives and overcome our own shortcomings. Barakallahu li wa lakum. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi ta'ala wa barakatuh. Okay.
Assalamu alaikum. Inshallah, we will be starting in the next few minutes. Whoever needs to renew their wudu, get a drink of water, inshallah, can go do that. Come back. We're going to be starting at 3:10. So we're like 10 minutes behind, but we're good, Ustad? All right. Maybe three minutes, inshallah. 3 minutes.